It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are here with me. And Colin Jeffrey joins us now for the showbiz segment of the show, which is brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window in the United States, online at windowworldstlouis.com. All right, Colin, we've got a few movies opening this week. It is an odd time of the year because during the summer, there are these huge blockbusters that open up, and maybe one other movie opens up against it. You know, if the Avengers is opening up, oh, the other studios go, all right, we're not going to be anywhere near that weekend. But when we get to the fall, when you have a different kind of movie hitting the screens, sometimes you get four or five that are going to compete for the attention at the box office, and I think this is one of those weekends, isn't it?
Yeah, there's definitely a handful of movies opening this week, and we'll say they're going to compete for attention. I think there's a couple that'll come out ahead because it's the same thing that happened last week. They find they're not all competing for the exact same audience.
Mm-hmm.
Like if, let's say, Steve Jobs that we're talking about this weekend, if it was opening last weekend, it would have competed with The Bridge of Spies. But they've got a week in between them, a week of grace.
Okay. So, well, let's talk about Steve Jobs because you and I both went to the press screening earlier this week. And Josh Gilbert, who produces Carney's show, was also there. And I don't want to say I was bored during the movie, but when it came to the end, I leaned over to Josh and I said, "Is it over?
Yeah.
Is that it?"
Did Josh go?
He did, actually. Yeah.
Oh, you got that laugh out of him? Yeah. Woo. That's tough.
So what did you think of the movie? Obviously, I've given a little bit of my review away here, but what did you think of Steve Jobs?
I don't disagree with you a whole lot, and I think I was more disappointed because of the pedigree of the trio of people at the head of this. Danny Boyle directing, Aaron Sorkin writing, and Michael Fassbender acting.
Mm-hmm.
Those are three people who, if you said they're going to do a movie, I'd be like, well, there's an Academy Award nomination for three people.
What would I be familiar with Danny Boyle from?
Danny Boyle recently did 127 Hours. He won the Academy Award for Slumdog Millionaire. He did a movie, we may have talked about it, Trance, from last year. That was a weird psychological thriller.
Mm-hmm.
Horror movies, he did Sunshine, 28 Days Later. And if you haven't seen 28 Days Later, it might be the best zombie movie ever.
You know, I kept going to the movie theater, and it told me that this movie's not opening up for 4 weeks.
Yes.
28 Days Later.
Dan,
you went back.
Dan, I didn't know you did a Paul Harris impression.
And then you went back, and boom.
Still not open. No. They delayed another 4 weeks. Man. I can't believe it.
And then Trainspotting from back in the day. This is a guy that has, again, a great roster of movies.
Okay.
Aaron Sorkin. I don't know how you don't know him at this point. He recently wrote Social Network. He did The Newsroom. He did West Wing. He did Sports Night. He did Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
A Few Good Men. Well, don't put Studio 60 in there. That was a piece of
but
garbage.
But it's just all of his TV there. He did TV shows. And then A Few Good Men was the first thing he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good first step.
Yes, it is.
Like, I don't know how you start off much better than that.
Yeah.
Romeo and Juliet. Shakespeare may have had a better. And then you've got Michael Fassbender, who is just a really talented actor who's coming into his own and starting to get the due.
Okay. But the way you're talking about these three people makes it sound like you didn't like the movie either.
I did not like the movie much at all. This is not a typical biopic. The way that this movie plays out is it is three scenes that are shot in real time. So when they say 2 minutes to be on, it's 2 minutes until... There's no playing around with time or anything like that. So it plays out very nicely. It's an interesting way to do a movie, to talk about Steve Jobs, who had such a sea change effect on technology in our lives.
Okay, I have to interrupt you to disagree with you. I don't think it's a very nice way to do a movie. I thought it was a convoluted way to do a movie because each of the three scenes takes place backstage right before he's about to do a product launch.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is of the Macintosh computer after the big 1984 ad had aired on the Super Bowl, and they were going to launch the Macintosh, even though it wasn't really ready for prime time. And then when that didn't do all that well, he was pushed out of the company.
When that didn't do all that well.
All right, it bombed. Macintosh, the original Macintosh computer, bombed. And then he was pushed out of the company, and he went off and he founded a new company called Next Computers, which was really just a black cube that didn't have much inside, and that bombed as well. But we see him in the second part of the movie, right before he's going to go do the product launch for that
and then 1988.
And then the third part is in 1998, where he's about to introduce the iMac computer, which somebody described as looking like Judy Jetson's Easy Bake Oven, which is a pretty good description of how they looked. Here's the problem with this movie. Most people in the year 2015 know Steve Jobs as the guy who helped bring forth, if not created and invented, the iPod, the iPhone, and the iPad. Mm-hmm. And this movie ends before any of those are in the picture.
Yes, it does.
So you get the boring history of Steve Jobs. You know what? I'm going to correct myself, because you don't actually get the history. You get to see Steve Jobs arguing backstage before product launches at three different sets in this movie. And if I were in charge of the studio, instead of calling this movie Steve Jobs, I would have called it Steve Jobs Argues with Everyone.
That's not far from it.
Is there one scene in this movie that is not Steve Jobs arguing with somebody at some point?
The last scene, the last 2 minutes of the movie, he does not argue with anyone.
Okay, that's a long way to go. That's a lot of arguing to sit through.
It is, and that sort of points to my major issue with it. I actually like it as a narrative device to say, as opposed to giving this biopic where we've got to show you, you know, like we do in Ray, where he loses his sight, because you have to show all these scenes.
The origin stories.
They say, we're going to pack all of these conversations that would have taken place in weeks and months and years, and we're going to pack them into 30 minutes. And I like that because it's tidy and neat.
But you don't actually learn any of the history of what happened and how Steve Jobs got to be Steve Jobs.
Exactly.
I don't need to see him as a boy. I don't need to see him as a teenager. But I would like to have seen more of that stuff of him and Steve Wozniak, who's played by Seth Rogen, who's fine, by the way.
Yes.
I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of that. Hey, we're developing this new personal computer that's going to be different from the IBM clones that are out there.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is where it falls flat. It wasn't particularly interesting direction. It was just, it's narrative, so I'm going to show two people talking on camera.
Yep.
It's dialogue that is Aaron Sorkin. I actually pulled a section of the dialogue here from this.
But the only thing you have to do to make me and your mom happy is come home at the end of the day.
The only thing you ever had to do to make me happy was come home at the end of the day.
I'm not going to like you, am I? Don't be ridiculous. Everybody likes me.
I'm not going to like you very much, am I?
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Dana. Everybody likes me.
And yes, you may have figured out this is not, in fact, from Steve Jobs. This is from every Aaron Sorkin movie and show ever.
I wondered what that was. That's a montage of the he likes me, you don't like me thing?
Oh, yes.
It's entirely up to you.
Tell the press. Don't tell the press. It's entirely up to you.
And so this is Aaron Sorkin. What we are finding out at this point in Aaron Sorkin's career, sadly, is he may be out of ideas. And we are just seeing the same scenes over and over and over.
Yeah. Or no one likes them.
Yeah, that may be it.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what this falls. It feels they walk and talk. And if you've watched The West Wing or any of these, they walk and talk. And then you add on top of it, Michael Fassbender acts as a jerk the entire movie. There's no depth to his character. It's just, hey, I'm being a jerk for 90 minutes, and then we'll try and have these 2 minutes at the end where I'm a good guy.
Right.
And it gets tiresome to see that.
So so here's the quickie review. If you want to see somebody who's a jerk arguing with other people for almost 2 hours, this is the movie for you.
Yes. Now,
and by the way, that's the clip that they'll pull out. Paul Harris from KTRS says, this is the movie for you.
That said, Seth Rogen, Kate Winslet, Jeff Daniels, and another actor, Michael Stahlberg, these are all supporting actors in this. I thought they were all very good.
I thought Kate Winslet was really good as Joanna Hoffman, who's the marketing executive who argues with Steve Jobs the most.
Yes.
unrecognizable as Kate Winslet, by the way.
Yes, and in a Polish accent.
Very, very good.
Very good. All those act. It's just the problem that the people who are supposed to carry you to the promised land here.
Yeah.
Just run the car into the wall.
There is nothing in this movie to tell you why Steve Jobs was a visionary.
No.
There are flashback scenes that are disruptive, not informative, and I blame Danny Boyle for that, but it's Sorkin who set up the structure of this, and it's funny to say this, but even for an Aaron Sorkin movie, it's too talky.
Yeah.
Nothing else happens except backstage arguments.
And you have to have better than just, I know how to point and click on a computer. This is a movie about how this guy wants to make a computer anyone can use. That's a central tenet to it. And then they start talking about things. Oh, this computer needs 2 ports. No, 8 ports. This is just an OS. And you're just, you have to have a deeper knowledge than the typical Apple user would in Steve Jobs' Macintosh.
But again, there's nothing about the iPod, the iPad, or the iPhone, which is what most people, including more recent Apple fans, care about.
Except for the last 25 seconds.
Again.
The last 2 minutes of the
movie. Is it
the
words on a black screen that said...
It's something like that.
It's very close to that. Yes, it starts off... I don't get it. We've got biopics on Steve Jobs. I guess this was a character study that was not good.
No.
This is one of my most disappointing movies of the year.
Yeah, I read that they're just going to release a Steve Jobs movie every year with the new iPhone.
This actually was a sequel. It's actually called Steve Jobs S.
Oh, my goodness.
That's horrible.
That's good. I like that. Now, if only there were upgrades that you could download that would make the movie better.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because sadly, I found a lot of bugs in the system here. What do you give it on a scale of 10?
I give it a 3.
I give it a 4, so about the same. All right. One of the other movies that's opening this weekend is called Rock the Casbah, which stars Bill Murray. Right there. Did you feel that when I said it stars Bill Murray? Mm-hmm. Everybody went, ooh, a new Bill Murray movie, right?
No, because Bill Murray has been really serious and everything lately. But this movie, the trailers I see, it looks like it could be funny. But it could be. But I'm not sure.
Let me tell you, first of all, this movie was directed by Barry Levinson. If you don't know that name, here are some of the movies Barry Levinson has made in the last 30 years. Diner, Tin Men, The Natural, Young Sherlock Holmes, Good Morning Vietnam, Rain Man, Avalon, Bugsy, Wag the Dog, and Bandits.
Mm.
Now, none of those movies is from the last 10 years. In fact, Bandits was the last good movie he made. That was in 2001.
No, and I loved Young Sherlock Holmes.
Brilliant movie.
Yes.
Great special effects at a time when we didn't have the CGI that we do now. It was very early on in computer graphics. Very, very good movie. Unfortunately, this is another Barry Levinson failure. Mm. And it's too bad because you hear a Bill Murray movie, you go, oh, I want to see that. Even St. Vincent that came out last year was a more serious movie with comedic undertones. Mm-hmm. I liked that movie. He was very good in that. But this one just fails. Here's the plot of this movie. Well, actually, let me tell you the plot of a movie that I would have liked to have seen. Because it's how this movie starts out. Bill Murray is a down-on-his-luck music manager who has lied to people about the successes of his careers. Like, I discovered Madonna. I hung out with the Stones. All these various stories that are not true. He's just kind of a guy who never really had any success, and he's still down on his luck. And one of his clients is played by Zooey Deschanel, who one night they go to a karaoke bar where she performs, and she's singing cover songs there. And she's complained to him in the previous scene, I want to do originals. I don't want to do cover. No, do this. This is how we're... I'm your manager. I know what's best for you. And so they do that. And in this bar, there's a drunk guy there who loves her performance and goes over to Bill Murray, her manager. I love her. She's great. Oh, good for you. No, really. I want to take her out on tour. Okay, good for you. It sounds like it's just a drunk talking. But the guy actually is part of the USO and says, I want to arrange for her to go on a USO tour of Afghanistan. And Bill Murray says, for money? Yeah, of course for money. And then the next thing you know, Bill Murray and Zooey Deschanel are on a plane and they're headed for Afghanistan where they're going to entertain the troops. Now that is a movie I would like to see.
Uh-oh.
Here is the problem. Once Bill Murray and Zooey Deschanel get to Afghanistan, and things immediately start going wrong, like their luggage is lost and the hotel that they're put in is a dump, she freaks out and she leaves and is never heard from again in the movie. So the plot you were looking forward to seeing has just literally left the hotel.
Hmm. So she's not in the movie the rest of the time?
Correct.
Wow.
And so now Bill Murray is in Afghanistan. Oh, by the way, she also left with his money and his passport. So he can't get out of there. And so now he's got to hustle away to try to figure out a way to get out of Afghanistan or something else. And then in the second part of the movie, he gets involved with Bruce Willis as a mercenary soldier playing that Bruce Willis mercenary soldier type, exactly what you want Bruce Willis for. There's a reason why, I'm sure in the script when they wrote it, before they even contacted him, they said, and Bruce Willis does this, because that's the guy you want. And then there are two munitions and arms sellers who are played by Scott Kahn from TV's Hawaii Five-O and the Ocean's 11 movies, and Danny McBride, who both can be fairly amusing and are kind of here to serve that purpose as the munitions guys and also to be kind of comic relief. And Bill Murray gets involved with them, which then gets him to the third part of the movie, which is he ends up in a small Pashtun town in Afghanistan where he's supposedly delivering munitions for McBride and Kahn, not McBride and Sons. This is McBride and Kahn. He's supposedly delivering munitions for them to these Pashtuns to help them defend their town from all the violence that's going on in Afghanistan. And one night he wanders off and hears a female voice singing in a cave.
Oh, okay.
And finds her, she's one of the locals, and she's in there watching a broadcast of Afghan Star, which is a true TV show that's like American Idol. But she can't go on that show because she's a girl and only boys are allowed on that show. After all, it's the repressive Afghanistan regime, particularly under the Taliban. Girls don't have any rights at all. But Bill Murray is determined to make this girl a star. And that's the third part of the movie. That part is actually based on a true story of a girl by the name of Latifa Azizi, who was 17 when she went on the show and caused a huge uproar in January of 2013 in Afghanistan. True life story, which also would be an interesting movie to see. But doesn't it sound like I just told you the plots of three different movies?
Yes.
And they all got mushed together into one movie?
Yeah.
Mush is what you end up with here. You don't end up with the good Bill Murray, Zooey Deschanel story of going off to do the USO in Afghanistan, which might be derivative of the movie The Sapphires that came out a couple of years ago about some Aboriginal girls who are hired to go and sing in Vietnam in the late 60s, and they do soul music, and that was an entertaining movie. That was well done. That could have been the kind of movie that we made with Bill Murray and Zooey Deschanel, but no, we got to get involved with this munition stuff and Bruce Willis, his character, and then with this Afghan girl who's going to sing on TV at the end, and it just, I was going to say goes off the rails, but it's never actually on the rails, or if it is, it doesn't leave the station. It's just, oh, such a disappointment.
Was it funny at all? Were there funny parts? Is it
it's funny in the first part with Bill Murray and Zooey Deschanel.
Is it supposed to be a comedy?
Yes. And they're promoting it as a comedy.
Okay.
And there are parts of it that are mildly amusing later on. But again, Murray and Deschanel would have made a good comedy. She knows how to do comedy. She's on that New Girl show. She's pretty good at that sort of stuff. And he, of course, is one of the kings of comedy. But, oh, and I forgot to mention one other character who's in here. Kate Hudson plays the hooker with a heart of gold.
Hey, there you go. Fourth movie. This is a value buy. That's what you call this. This is a value buy. You get to see four movies.
You remember the movie Almost Famous?
Yes.
Cameron Crowe made it, and in that movie, Kate Hudson plays Penny Lane, the Band-Aid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not a groupie. I was going to say zombie. I'm not a groupie. I'm a Band-Aid. This character in this movie is Penny Lane grown up and gone to Afghanistan and bought a double wide and is now having sex for money with the local Afghani guys. That's the fourth plot that's built into this, and it's wow! That's way too much non-working stuff, because none of it goes anywhere.
Yeah.
It does not go anywhere. 3 out of 10.
Not good.
3 out of 10 for Rock the Casbah. Just not worth it. What else is opening this weekend?
The big one is The Last Witch Hunter with Vin Diesel, which he plays a family man. No, I think he hunts witches.
You haven't seen it?
No, I did not. It was at the same time as Steve Jobs.
You know, when we went to, it was at Ronnie's that we went to see the screening of Steve Jobs. And when I was walking in there, the press person for the studio said, you know, we have two screenings here tonight. Are you here for Steve Jobs or The Last Witch Hunter? And I laughingly said, yeah, like I'd go see The Last Witch Hunter. And then I sat through 2 hours of boring Steve Jobs, and I thought, maybe I should have gone to see The Last Witch Hunter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's actually less conflict in that than there was in Steve Jobs.
Does The Last Witch Hunter argue with everybody for 2 hours? No.
He's much more amenable.
Probably goes out there and hunts witches. I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
Paranormal Activity, the last of this, the sixth and final installment of Paranormal Activity.
How much you want to bet me right now it's not the last one?
It is.
No.
Blumhouse is done. They're not making money on it.
Really?
I mean, they're making money, but it's not. Let's put it this way. This is going to do, let's say, around $10 million. That's the lowest debut for any of these since the 2009 movie, the first one, started off, and that was only in 12 theaters.
Wow.
This is going to be in several thousand theaters.
I thought Paranormal Activity was one of these.
Well, no, it makes them for a few million dollars, and then they make like $40 million or $100. I mean,
okay.
The first Paranormal Activity was $15,000, and I think it grossed $152
million. Wow.
It's the greatest success like ever. I mean, Blair Witch Project. The guy who, Jason Blum, who is behind Blumhouse Productions that does all of these, he passed when he was working at Miramax on Blair Witch Project for $60,000. And that went on to make, I don't know, $234 million or something. So this is still going to make money, but let's say it comes at like $35 or $40 million. After you factor in advertising and a higher budget, he's not going to make a lot of money, and that's not what he's about.
So they've announced that this is going to be the last one?
Yep, this is it.
Until 3 years from now when somebody goes back and does the Origin reboot.
I don't know. He's sort of, these haven't progressed in chronological order. They've bounced back. So we have the Origin story, I think, already. And
okay.
I don't know.
Remember when we were told it was the last Rocky movie? There aren't going to be any more Rocky movies. And then came
way too old. Huh?
Now there's another one.
Now came Rocky Balboa, and now Creed.
Creed
with Apollo Creed's son.
Gem and the Holograms.
Remember Star Trek V was going to. That's the last one. There will not be any more Star Treks after this. And then they just reboot and go back to the origin and tell it again. So there will be a Paranormal Activity 7.
I never said there wasn't going to be a Rocky.
Well, you didn't have any other choices, Sly.
No, I want to keep working.
Yeah, then Gem
Sly's probably upset he didn't get the Bruce Willis role in Rock of the Casbah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And someone he could understand.
I can get you out of Afghanistan.
Rambo movie was actually in, wasn't there one in Afghanistan, I thought? I can't remember.
I don't know.
There have been too many of those.
I don't know either.
You did. You knew at some point, though, didn't you, Sly?
Yeah.
I did. I don't remember now.
My goodness. Jeez.
Go chase a chicken.
I'll ask Pauly.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Pauly. There you go. Another story outside of movies that I have is the FCC. The chief of the FCC has come out because Donald Trump is set to host Saturday Night Live.
He is?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You didn't know this?
No.
Yeah, he's hosting Saturday Night Live coming up. I thought you were just messing with me.
No.
Yes, he's seriously hosting Saturday Night Live November 7th.
Wait a second. How can you? I don't know everything about equal time.
That's what he said. That's where I'm going with this.
Okay.
There are 22 episodes of Saturday Night Live every season. Donald Trump will host the fourth. Elizabeth Banks will host the fifth, leaving us with how many episodes?
Well, that would be 17 left.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, actually, 18. Yeah, 17 left.
Okay.
I just did the math
you presented me. 22 minus 5
is
17.
How many presidential candidates are there?
17.
Minus 1 for Donald Trump. So with equal time, 16 of the final. That's not actually how it works, but 16 of the final 17.
Now, we're joking around about this, but this is a real thing. There's no such thing as the fairness doctrine in media like there was two generations ago, but there still is equal time, which is outside of a news broadcast, or, for instance, we can interview politicians because of the format that we have here, and we don't have to offer equal time to their opponents if we don't want to. We do, but we don't have to. But if you have them in a non-news format...
Mm-hmm. Today Show. Well, Today Show counts.
For instance, Hillary Clinton was on Saturday Night Live a couple of weeks ago for, you know, a skit, and she was probably on there for 3 or 4 minutes. Mm-hmm. Other candidates could go to the NBC-owned stations. mm-hmm. not the NBC network, because that doesn't apply to them. They're not licensed. The network's not licensed, but the stations are licensed by the Federal Communications Commission.
Yes.
And they are required to give equal time to any other candidate who requests it. So I wouldn't be surprised to find out that other candidates don't go to SNL for equal time for the Hillary thing. But now you've got Donald Trump hosting the entire show. Does that mean that 90 minutes worth, or?
See, I don't know. He's going to take a look at it, but Hillary Clinton was on SNL. The runtime of her skit was 3 minutes and 11 seconds.
Okay.
Lauren Lessig, who you've never heard of. He's a Harvard professor who's a one issue candidate. Entirely campaign finance. He says he would come in, put a constitutional amendment on campaign finance, and resign. He wants to do one thing, and then he would resign the presidency.
Okay.
Has filed requests for 3 minutes and 11 seconds with every single NBC owned
station.
That's
exactly what I was talking
about.
I didn't know that was going on.
He is actually doing it. So I just think it'd be funny if SNL had to give each presidential candidate time to host.
And by the way, you have to give it in that same time period
election
that the original broadcast
yes.
was on. You can't say, okay, Mr. Lessig, you can have 3 o'clock to 3:13 a.m. That's yours. You can't
yes.
do that. He would have to be on the Saturday Night Live slot sometime between 10:30 and midnight on a Saturday night, right?
Yeah. Well, in California, for example, they had to pull Arnold Schwarzenegger movies from the theaters while he was running. Fred Thompson, you may remember.
Not from the theaters. They had to take it off TV.
Off TV. Fred Thompson, you may remember, was on Law & Order and ran for president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They had to pull reruns from television.
I wonder if they had to do Love Boat when Fred Grandy ran and became a congressman. I bet they did.
Oh, I'll bet you they did, too. Yeah.
Same thing with... Yeah, so this is a real thing, but he said we are going to enforce this year. So Donald Trump being on SNL.
I wonder if they're going to take each segment that he's in and time it, the total time.
So you wouldn't get 90 minutes. You would get a time equivalent to however much time he's...
Yeah, yes. So if he's in there for 15 minutes total, then you would have to offer 15 minutes, I guess.
Okay, now what happens with, like Bernie Sanders, Dan mentioned, was on Jimmy Kimmel Live this week.
Boom. That's time back. He was on Ellen the week before. Boom, that's time.
So any other candidate can go to all of these TV stations and say, I demand equal time for that. Why aren't they doing that?
They probably are. It's just they don't have to do it right now. I mean, that's the best way. They don't have to do it like within 12 days or something. Hmm. They've got a bit more time than that. It's in the election cycle. So they'll probably just wait to see who drops out and not give, you know.
What a nightmare that would be for station general managers to have to get. Did we get a request today? Yes, we got 4 more requests.
Yes.
We got 3 Republicans and 1 Democrat, somebody Lessig who we've never heard of.
Yep.
Wants to get in here and have equal time. Wow.
SNL this week.
Now, wait a second. It's important to point out, SNL doesn't have to put those people on.
No, I just think it would be very funny if SNL did have to put them on. It's 16 of the last 17 would be SNL with your host, Mike Huckabee. that would be musical guest, Carly Fiorina.
It's the local station's musical guest, Carly Fiorina.
I don't know. I guess that's how it works.
Is she the one who did Call Me Maybe? No, that's a different Carly.
Yeah.
By the way, Carly's
playing the Target woman this episode.
That's funny.
There you go.
All right, one other thing I've got to ask you about, because I know you're our Star Wars and superheroes guy. Did you buy tickets for the Star Wars movie yet?
I did not, because they should screen it.
But if you were not going to a press screening of it...
I would have bought my tickets already.
Really?
Yes, yes.
Because on Monday, after the, and I didn't watch halftime, but at halftime of Monday Night Football, they showed the trailer for the next Star Wars movie, Star Wars 7.
I tuned in just to see it. My wife had to watch. We had to watch the last, 41 seconds of the first half. That took, of course, 10 minutes to play.
Okay, stop complaining about football while I'm complaining about Star Wars. One complaint at a time. We don't want to turn this into Steve Jobs. but here's my question. Why would you need to buy tickets in advance for a movie? Now, before you answer, let me just point this out. The movie is not going to be shown once.
No.
The movie's not going to be shown for one day. The movie's not going to be shown for one weekend. The movie's going to be shown for weeks, if not months, in movie theaters.
Yes.
The movie's going to open on a Wednesday or a Friday, whatever it is, around Christmas time. It's going to open, and then I guarantee you the next Tuesday at noon, you can go to a matinee and pay $5 and get in and see it in a half-empty theater.
Yes.
So why would you pay now to be part of the horde that's going to be there at one of the first screenings?
I think there's a few reasons.
Okay.
One is, I think this is a movie that may be very difficult to avoid spoilers, things you didn't want to hear. If you're on the internet all day, I think that could be part of it. The other, it's festive. You have all these other people who share a similar interest, and you get to stand in line for a few hours and talk about it and get excited, and that's fun. The other aspect of it, why I would go to
standing
an early
in
one,
line is fun.
And talking about the movie.
You lost
people,
me at all these other people.
Why would you go see an NFL game in person?
I don't.
You can watch it at home. But I mean, it's, you go there to be part of it and do all that. The other half of it is, I was not old enough to see the first Star Wars movies in theater.
Mm-hmm.
The second trilogy, I went to see all of those at midnight with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
We would go see them.
Mm-hmm.
That is a fun thing that we all like to do. So we would try to get together for that. That being said, there are tickets now. I don't know if you have this there in front of you. For the opening night, for the first episodes, they are going as high as $10,000 for a pair.
Get out of here.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm not even kidding a little bit.
You mean, wait, are you telling me that people who went on and crashed the Fandango website on Monday night and bought the tickets are now, what, StubHubbing them?
Essentially, they're selling
them. You can ask for anything. I saw Cubs tickets, you know, when they were thinking they may win that last series, going for $1 million on StubHub. So you can essentially put any price you want to
buy. What are people
Nobody
actually,
will buy those.
What are people actually paying for Star Wars 7 tickets?
I bet they're doubling face value of things. Just to be able to see them, because you have to remember, it's not necessarily about in St. Louis where we've got a dozen theaters you could go to. It's in the middle of nowhere that someone may have purchased them online or bought out an entire theater and said, if you want to see it in this town, give me money because I own all the tickets.
Yeah, you own them for that show.
Yes, I know.
I'm sure the movie's going to be projected on that screen tomorrow.
But for a month and for 2 months, probably.
Yes.
But I know exactly how Colin is. I am not like a fanatic like for Star Wars like Colin is, but I know what he's saying about the spoilers and everything, because they say that there are certain spoilers in this movie. So to sit around, and I understand standing around with a bunch of people and being excited about all of that, but to go see it firsthand and be one of the first ones, then you're not going to be spoiled later.
This sounds to me like the people who go to an Apple store and stand in line for 3 days to get the new iPhone.
Yeah.
That iPhone is still on sale. I've never heard of an Apple store saying, that's it, we'll never have that iPhone model ever again. You missed out on it.
Yes. That being said, the guy who did put those tickets online said it was a joke between he and his son, but now that he's getting interest, he's like, I'm probably going to keep them up there, because you never know.
Oh, that's a good dad. First, you taunt the kid with, hey, guess what daddy bought? We're going to go see the Star Wars movie before anybody else. And then you go back to the kid and say, guess what daddy did? He just sold those tickets for $25 and destroyed your dream of seeing that movie first.
Yes. So
what a dad.
We'll see. But yeah, I would love to go, but I go to the press screening, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Hey, we had tickets for the fourth game of the Cardinals in 2004, the Cardinals and the Red Sox.
Mm-hmm.
And the Red Sox, we felt, were going to win the World Series and sweep the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother and I were going to the game, and we thought, you know what? We could probably sell these tickets to a Red Sox fan and get some pretty good money. And we thought, $600. Otherwise, we just go into the game and just be a part of history.
Yeah.
And so people didn't want to pay $600 a piece for them. So
did anybody offer you $500?
No.
But they see, there's a difference there. That's a once in a lifetime event.
I get it. It's just,
this is a movie that'll be available on screens for months, and then, by the way, available for download about 4 months after that.
Yeah.
You'll be able to watch it in your home. Which may not be the way to go with the Star Wars movie. I understand that, but
yes. My brother did sell his ticket stub on eBay after the game.
Oh, my gosh.
To a Boston fan.
Wow.
Traded him tickets to Star Wars.
Yeah. All right. We are desperately late. That's the showbiz stuff for today. Thank you, Colin. Thank you.